the year start talking and they don't stop talking and they don't stop talking and they don't stop talking. All that glitters is gold. How are you feeling?
Fine.
Yeah?
Yeah. I mean, I have a bit of sniffles, but...
Oh, keep away. By the time this episode drops, we won't be worried about the coronavirus anymore. It'll be long gone. In 2 weeks.
Who knows?
In 2 weeks' time, who knows what'll happen in this world? We could all be dead like The Exorcist.
Ideal.
Dead like. This is horribly disrespectful. Max von Sydow died just the other day. I mean, it will have been weeks by the time this episode drops. But I was in the middle of editing the Exorcist episode when the news broke. He was in his 80s or 90s? 90s. So, yeah, that was sad. Mm-hmm. Oh, what a great career.
I forgot about that because then we switched to talking about Bunshaker books.
Oh, yeah. So in a bookstore we used to volunteer shutting down.
We.
You. Did I say we used to volunteer? No, I said you used to volunteer.
No, you
just
said
my
we.
Yous sound like we's.
No.
Hey, Ollie, what movie are we discussing today?
The Three Musketeers from 1974.
The Three Musketeers. Do you know why we're discussing The Three Musketeers?
Because it's on the list.
Because we were supposed to discuss The Spirit of the Beehive.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that.
And so I tested it today, and it didn't work.
What do you mean?
I could get a picture, but I could not get a sound. So I am going to have to re-examine my attempts to acquire The Spirit of the Beehive because the copy that was loaned to me does not work. So my apologies to the friend who loaned it to me, but there's something wrong with your copy or with my player or I don't know what. So, but that's just cool because Three Musketeers, I don't know why I said that. The Three Musketeers is a two-part film. Mm-hmm. So we can watch Musketeers and then watch Spirit of the Beehive and then watch the second half. It'll be like a little breather in between adventures.
But I'd rather just watch both.
Well, who knows? We're not going to watch them both today. But the issue is this. I didn't do any research for The Three Musketeers because I was planning on doing Spirit of the Beehive.
Well, the good news is that we're not recording the episode today.
We're not recording the episode. But I think of a little background.
Yeah.
So all I can tell you
is that it's about the Three Musketeers. And it has the same villain as, what was that movie called?
The Devils. Cardinal Richelieu, still the villain. So it takes place, same time period.
Mm-hmm. Hopefully less depressing.
Yes. It's directed, okay, so just a little bit of background. It is directed by Richard Lester, who is an American film director who directed movies in England. Go figure. He's a Jewish kid, born in Philadelphia, moved to England when he was like 15, got involved in the British television industry, directed movies for British television, caught the attention of Peter Sellers, the famous comedian, and was like, we're turning our radio show, The Goon Show, into a TV show. Can you help? And he was like, I'm a funny American, sure. And then they made a bunch of short films together. John Lennon of the Beatles was like, these short films sure are funny. I do like the short movies that you made. And... I'm doing characters. So a lot of the short movies that you made, Mr. Lester. Can you play? Would you be interested in directing? It's a Hard Day's Night.
Now it sounds like you're trying to go Scottish.
Trying. Would you be interested in directing? Would you be interested in directing our movie, A Hard Day's Night, the movie that will define the Beatles in the popular imaginations for hundreds of thousands of people around the world? Richard Lester was like, sure. And then they were like, we really liked what you did with this movie. Will you direct Help? And so he directed Help, became sort of a famous American director of British wacky comedy. He did A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum. He did the follow-up to The Mouse That Roared. And he was just kind of known as this like sort of large-scale comedy director, like did big, grand comedies. And this movie marks the transition into action for him. Like, let's make action. And he did it for the producers, the Salkins. What do you know about the Salkins?
I smell my burger.
Oh, yeah. So Ollie hasn't eaten at all again. And that's a bad thing because Ollie can only think about
boyga.
Boygas.
Booga boy.
Okay, I told you never say that. Who is Burger Boy again?
You came up with it. Soggy Spinch the Burger Boy.
Soggy Spinch the Burger Boy is
my cat, my new cat that I'm going to get.
Well, the original Soggy Spinch the Burger Boy was Alexander Salgan, a French-Mexican film producer who produced just a ton of movies, but is known very much for producing the Superman films.
Oh.
In America. There's two Salkins. I don't remember the other Salkin's name. Produced the Superman films, produced Supergirl, produced Santa Claus the Movie in 1985, but also produced these Three Musketeer films. And the Three Musketeers, the two Three Musketeer movies, which were supposed to be one movie, got split in half because they were so long. The two original Superman movies, which were originally one movie, but they got split in half because they were so long. And the Santa Claus the Movie, which was supposed to be the next Superman series. And you can tell he wanted to, the Salkins wanted to make it into two major motion pictures, because the Santa Claus movie is basically an origin story and then a weird, wacky adventure of Santa Claus in America. Could have been two major motion pictures, but thank God weren't, because it's one of the worst movies ever made. Tried to make Santa Claus into a superhero origin story. Did not work. The Salkins, that's kind of what they're known for. But this is the Salkins, like, getting into wacky action. So.
Waction.
Again, you're not allowed to ever say that. Before you eat your burger, what do you know about the Three Musketeers? Have you ever read The Three Musketeers? Do you know anything about The Three Musketeers?
I think I've seen it once when I was really little.
Like a movie? There's been a million movies of it.
I think I've seen something about it. I know that they have swords.
They do have swords. There was a major motion picture made in the 90s with a bunch of like hot young action stars at the time.
I wouldn't know. I was very young when I saw it.
What I'm saying is you could have seen that one. You could have seen any of them.
When I think of The Three Musketeers, I think of The Princess Bride and I think of Montoya.
Inigo Montoya?
Yeah.
Would you say you think of swashbuckling action?
Kind of, yeah.
So when I was a kid, I had zero interest in swashbuckling action.
What? Why?
Nothing could interest me less than swashbuckling. Like, if there was a sword or a mask or a big feather hat, I was like, I do not care.
It's so fun.
I did not care. Later in life, I was like, yeah, it's good. But when I was a kid, Home of Three Musketeers thing just pass me by. All I can tell you about Three Musketeers is that there's four of them,
mm-hmm.
and Richelieu, mm-hmm. D'Artagnan, swords, and Alexandre Dumas wrote the novel. Alexandre Dumas is considered one of the greatest novelists of all time, a French writer, and the thing that most people tend to ignore or not even know about Alexandre Dumas, he was black,
mm-hmm.
and many people ignore that fact. So let's hear it for writers of color who are the most successful writers in the history of the modern world.
Not surprising.
And that's it. That's it. This movie was so long, they were like, make it two movies. And so we're going to watch them.
My movies
are so long. I'm Richard Lester. He went on to direct one of the Supermans. He took over.
You know, it's funny because I've had so many conversations about Superman today. It's wild.
What did you say about Superman?
Well, in psych, we had to think of a hero.
Uh-huh.
Just like the first thing that came to our mind when we thought of a hero. And it was Superman. Because I had just been listening to Katz and Yammer.
Mm-hmm.
Been listening to their cover of, what is that song called?
I must have dreamed a thousand dreams.
Yes.
Yeah. Land of Confusion.
Yeah. Which mentions Superman.
Yes.
So Superman has been a theme of today.
Well, let's continue with the original Supermans. The Three Musketeers, D'Artagnan, Porthos.
I also think of candy.
Athos, Porthos.
I also think of candy when you say the Three Musketeers.
Oh, yeah. Tasty bar. The Man in the Iron Mask, part of the Three Musketeers legendarium.
I'm so hungry.
Should we watch a movie?
Yes, please.
You can eat a burger.
Yep.
All right, I'm Phil.
And I'm Ollie.
And it's Del Toro time. Welcome back to our show. We have a surprise in that we originally were going to record one movie.
Mm-hmm.
And then what happened?
I said, what if we did something radical and recorded two movies?
Now, when you say radical, do you mean like off the wall or do you mean like the Ninja Turtles screaming radical?
I don't know.
Why don't you know?
I don't have a frame of reference for the Ninja Turtles screaming radical.
Okay, imagine a turtle, just any turtle.
Any turtle.
Any turtle in the world. Uh-huh. Imagine it is holding a sword.
Okay.
Imagine it is screaming radical.
Then probably now, that.
Okay, just wanted to make sure. So yeah, so we finished the first movie and you were like, why don't we just do the whole thing about both movies?
Well, considering like the fact that there was a mini preview at the end of the first one, it just seemed like a thing we should do.
Yeah, it seems like it follows on. Now, I mentioned after we saw that when I saw Back to the Future Part 2 in the theater, there was a mini preview at the end of it for the next movie in the series.
Yeah.
Because they had filmed both of those back to back, which is... So they filmed Back to the Future Part 2 and 3 back to back. Back to the Future Part 2 takes place in the future. Back to the Future Part 1 took place in the past.
Did it? I can't remember.
Back to the Future Part 2 takes place in the future. And Back to the Future Part 3 takes place in the Wild West. So 2 and 3 are very much like separate films. Very different locales.
I think we started watching the first one and then we stopped.
I think we finished it, actually.
I can't remember. I just remember like watching it for 15 minutes and then the rest of it's blank.
Maybe you went back in time and your memory was wiped.
Yeah.
But this movie was not filmed in the way that Back to the Future 2 and 3 were filmed. Back to the Future 2 and 3, they're like, we're just going to shoot them back to back. We have the cast. We have the special effects rigs. We have the crew and everything. We've set it up. Just going to film them one after the other. Just like Lord of the Rings. They're like, we're making three movies. We're just going to keep filming. And as we finish, we just move on into the next one. But these two movies were set up to be one film originally.
Yee.
Okay, so I finally figured out who the producers were. They were Alexander and Ilya Salkind. There's more Salkinds involved in the Salkind verse. But it's
into
father
the Salkind verse.
The Salkind verse. It's Alexander and Ilya Salkind, father and son. Don't ask me which is which.
Which is which?
I don't know. Please don't ask me. The whole like let's split this movie into two at the last minute was not. It was pretty much supposed to be. They did it like this just to get out of paying the actors for filming two films.
Ah.
And the actors were like, "What?" And they sued and they got their money. They didn't get all the money they would have gotten, but this created the Salkind Clause, which now says, "And Salkind Clause." It's not the creepy film producer who comes down your chimney every year.
Ho, 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 here comes the Salkind Clause.
Here comes the Salkind Clause. Although they did go on to make a terrible movie about Santa Claus.
Yeah.
Called Santa Claus the Movie, in which an evil toy maker tries to create a new holiday called Christmas 2. And he gets Santa's top elf to steal Santa's secret formula for flying so they can make toys that fly. But what the elf does, and candy bar and candy canes that let kids fly, but what the elf doesn't know is that if you put them all together in too close to each other, they will explode and kill everyone.
Oh my God.
So Santa Claus and a plucky orphan have to stop the elf and the evil toy maker from killing everyone on Christmas.
Through Sounds the power. Like my kind of movie.
I challenge you to watch it if you can find it anywhere. Santa Claus the Movie, 1985. I saw it in the theater around the same time that I saw Back to the Future. It's full circle.
We should probably explain our situation right now.
So what is our situation right now?
I can't see you.
Why not? Because you've been blinded by the light.
Yeah. No, because I'm not with you.
Right. Where are you? College in your dorm room?
I don't have a dorm room. And if I did, I wouldn't be in it.
No, you are not. You are sequestered away.
Yeah, at my mom's.
Why?
Because the world is dying.
Because the world is dying.
Okay, it's not that bad.
Right. If you're listening to this the day it drops, then you are well aware that we are all isolated in our homes. Mm-hmm. You are isolated in your mother's home.
Yeah.
And I am across the street in a different home.
What?
I'm 10 minutes away in a different house. And just for isolation purposes, we are keeping our household separate until this whole thing resolves itself.
Which it should. not that far from now.
But this is our first experience, like, not being in the same room while recording this show over the years. We've been doing this. We've always been together. And we watched the second movie in the series apart, but at the same time.
Yes.
Streamed it together. And now we are recording together. And as unideal as it is, it seems to be working.
Hey, I mean, when I go, when I study abroad, this is what we're going to have to do, so.
That's true. That's true. When you say study abroad, it's funny because there's another, okay, so these movies are directed by Richard Lester. Richard Lester went on to direct A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum. There is narration at the beginning of A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum, where the narrator, Pseudolus, is talking about this old man, and he's like, he's an old man, abroad now, but when he says abroad, he does his hands in the shape of like a shapely woman, like, and then he's like, I mean, abroad now, because abroad and a broad,
two different words.
And then I just realized that that's not actually in the movie; it's in a video I saw of the play.
Ah.
So that was a reference that went through my head so fast, and then it took me talking through it to realize not actually a Richard Lester reference. I'm trying to throw in as many Richard Lester references. Did you know that Richard Lester is one of Guillermo del Toro's favorite directors?
I'm not surprised.
He says he's a master. Like there are so many references. If you just Google Guillermo del Toro, Richard Lester, or Real GDT, Richard Lester, you'll see Guillermo del Toro mentioning Richard Lester up and down. He's like, he was a definite influence on Steven Soderbergh and Schizopolis. And I'm like, I didn't know anyone was this big a fan of Richard Lester. But he only mentions the Three Musketeers like once.
I wonder what Guillermo del Toro is doing right now in quarantine.
He's being cradled in the arms of a giant Frankenstein statue.
Yeah. It's so funny to me to see like celebrities complaining about being in quarantine when their house is like the size of a city.
Right. Yeah. It's they're trying so hard to relate to us. And they're failing.
They have a Starbucks in their house.
Right.
Calm down.
but because we're covering both of these movies, which were filmed back to back, were filmed at the same time simultaneously, we're gonna have to like sort of zip through what they're about.
Well, I mean, it's not that difficult to explain what they're about.
Oh, is it not? What are they about?
They're about the Three Musketeers, okay, or the Four Musketeers. Okay. And in the first one, it's about the Queen has a love affair with the Duke of Buckingham.
Yep.
And the bad guy, whatever his name is.
Cardinal Richelieu.
Yeah, Richelieu wants to expose her.
Why?
Because he wants power.
Yeah,
he doesn't like her.
And he wants England and France to like go to war.
Yeah. Which is weird.
Yeah, because he wants to consolidate his power through the king. He wants, because Richelieu is the, you know, he's the cardinal, he works for the king. Mm-hmm. He was the bad guy in our last movie.
Wild.
Yeah.
People really didn't like this guy, huh?
So then what happens?
Well, there's this fumbling farm boy.
Yep, named D'Artagnan.
Yeah,
he's kind of the Luke Skywalker of the movie.
Yeah, it's funny because one of the musketeers looks like old Luke Skywalker.
That's true. So you kept saying that Oliver Reed as Athos mm-hmm. looked like Luke Skywalker in The Last Jedi.
Yes.
Yes, I was like, what? And then I watched it and I was like, yeah. And Michael York looks a little bit like, I mean, not his face so much, but he looks a little bit like Luke Skywalker in the first Star Wars movie with like the shaggy blonde hair and the kind of like, oh, like he's so gangly. Like they do. There's a lot of Michael York with his shirt off in this movie.
Yeah.
And he is not built like your typical like modern Hollywood action hero.
Protagonist.
He actually has a concave chest.
Yeah.
Like his chest goes in and he's muscular.
Mm-hmm.
Like he's in great shape.
He looks like he was severely dehydrated before they filmed this movie.
He looks like he was severely malnourished before they filmed this movie.
Probably both, knowing Hollywood.
So Michael York, he sets out to become a musketeer of the king.
Because his father was a musketeer.
Yeah. Do you know what a musketeer is?
A guy who uses a musket.
A musket. There's not many muskets in this movie, though.
Nope, but there are a lot in the second movie.
There are a lot, but for musketeers, like they use swords mostly.
Well, like, what would you use a musketeer for in their scenarios?
You have your guns out.
why do you need that gun out? It takes so long to reload. It's so hard to aim. Also, they do so much close combat.
They do make a big deal of how long it takes to load a gun in these movies. So yeah, he sets out to become a musketeer of the guard. But he runs into someone on the way to become a musketeer. The Count de Rochefort.
Is this the Eye Patch Man?
Eye Patch Man Count de Rochefort, played by,
I don't know,
Christopher Lee. Christopher Lee. Lord of the Rings, Christopher Lee.
Saruman the many colored.
That's Christopher Lee.
That's why his face looked kind of familiar.
Yeah, we saw him also in one of the Frankenstein movies. He played the creature in the Frankenstein with the vat of acid.
Okay.
The Hammer film.
But how are you able to tell what he looks like if he's playing Frankenstein's monster?
Because he's got those eyes. He's Christopher Lee. He's got those eyes. I know
you
Christopher
can only
Lee very
see
well.
One of his eyes in this movie.
Christopher Lee.
He's great in this movie.
Yeah, he is. In these movies.
He's a great villain. This is Michael York's first lead role. You might know Michael York from three movies that you are a huge fan of. The Austin Powers movies.
Does he play the lead?
Oh, behave.
Does he play the lead?
No, he plays Basil Exposition, the man who tells Austin Powers what's going on all the time.
I have no idea what's going on.
This is Basil Exposition. And he pops in. Michael York, he looks exactly the same in those movies as he does in The Three Musketeers. Because Michael York, even when he was a baby, was 40 years old. He just had a face that looked 40 years old. Oliver Reed at times looks younger than Michael York in this movie.
Who's
and that
Michael
man,
York?
What?
Who's Michael York?
He plays D'Artagnan.
Oh.
He's the lead. The young lead.
I forgot his name.
Yes, D'Artagnan. So Oliver Reed plays Athos. Frank Finlay plays Porthos, who's
is he the gangly guy?
The
long haired the long haired one?
He is the there's Porthos, and then there's Richard Chamberlain who plays Aramis. And Aramis is the musketeer who is who's trying to become a priest.
Is that the one who's the player?
Yeah, he's the youngest looking. He's the youngest of the three musketeers. The sort of the prettiest. Yeah, Frank Finlay is the one who is always dressing. He's a fop. He's always dressing like, he's concerned about his fashion.
Yeah.
Yeah. So those are our three musketeers. And so Michael York runs into all three of them at one point.
And gets challenged to a duel.
By each of them.
Yep.
And they all show up at the same place Oliver Reed is going to fight him first. The other two show up as his seconds, and then they're like, we're all going to fight this guy. Mm-hmm. And that's when he ends up having to fight Eyepatch Guy, who he had to fight earlier, who humiliated him and broke his father's sword. A lot goes on. There's so much incident in this movie. This movie moves at a breakneck pace.
Yeah. I couldn't watch the first part of this movie.
Oh, that's right. You hid your eyes. You hid your eyes more in the beginning of this movie than you did during The Devils. Why did this movie disturb you more than The Devils?
I have secondhand embarrassment issues.
But you got secondhand embarrassment from watching this movie before there was any secondhand embarrassment happening.
Let me just say that my social anxiety kicked in.
So you just knew right off the bat, okay, this country bumpkin's going to go to the city and become a musketeer. This is going to be humiliating.
Yes.
And then you were like, we have to turn this movie off. I guess Richard Lester's Three Musketeers, why are we turning this one off? We watched a movie where a man got his tongue pierced during a medieval torture. We watched a movie where a little girl got the devil inside her body, and you're like, I can't watch this country bumpkin fall down.
What can I say? Except, also, I realize now that The Exorcist was our last movie, not The Devils.
Right, I forgot about that.
We forgot about The Exorcist, everybody.
We did. It's always there. It's always inside us all. He's with the Musketeers. They run into they're going to fight. The King's men show up, led by Count de Rochefort. Tries to arrest them all, and there's a huge sword fight.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Is it a sword fight or is it a party?
It's a sword fight party.
Yeah.
Everyone starts fighting in the streets. The musketeers and D'Artagnan get the upper hand naturally. Kill a bunch of people, seemingly.
Yeah.
So let's talk about in this movies, both of these movies, they're just killing people left and right.
Mm-hmm.
And like, that's okay, I guess.
It's funny because like, it's the king's men who are trying to kill them.
Right.
But they're the king's men.
Right.
So, like, they're all committing treason.
Well, it's like, it's and it's the, they're the king's men, I think, and the guys in red are the cardinal's men. I think that's the way it works. There's Cardinal Richelieu's soldier, like guard or police force or whatever, and the musketeers work for the king, so they kind of, I guess, like, balance each other out. Like, you guys kill each other, it doesn't really matter, I guess is how it works.
I guess.
Oh, yeah, and Cardinal Richelieu, by the way, everybody, is played by Charlton Heston. Charlton, Planet of the Apes Heston. Charlton, Last Man on Earth, Omega Man Heston. Charlton, You'll Pry My Gun from My Cold Dead Hands Heston. A man who is known for playing, like, gruff, tough guys. But then you see him as Cardinal Richelieu, and you're like, oh, yeah, he could actually, like, act and, like, play, like, a... play like a sensitive, like not sensitive, but like a sort of a soft-spoken, like conniver, as opposed to just like a brash, like in-your-face tough guy.
I liked him in the second movie.
In the second movie?
Yeah.
But not in the first movie.
The first movie, he was a jerk.
Yeah, Richelieu, like, he's a politician. He's not like just a like Count de Rochefort is more of a villain. Milady de Winter is more of a villain, but. Yeah. Richelieu is just like a crappy politician. And he's more dangerous that way, of course. So they win their little battle, and he becomes the three musketeers are like, you're pretty cool. You're one of us now. All for one and one for all, and all for one and one for all. Whatever. They only say that like once in this whole movie.
Kicked someone in the butt.
He did. He kicked so many people butt.
I love swashbuckling. I'm just gonna put that out there.
You seem to This movie was so dangerous to make.
Yeah.
Richard Lester didn't film a lot of coverage. He just set up like five cameras at once.
Yeah.
And filmed a fight scene. And so there was hardly any stunt work.
Oh.
Because he just filmed his actors doing stuff. That's why so many actors got hurt. At one point, Michael York had to fill in for his own stunt performer because his stunt performer got injured doing stunts. And Michael York was like, I guess I just have to do this.
I thought you had more than one stunt person.
Oh, they were all dead by the end of this. Oliver Reed got stabbed. Michael York got stabbed. People were getting like their knees sprained. I think like Raquel Welch got injured fighting with Faye Dunaway. Faye Dunaway got injured fighting with Raquel Welch. One of the two. Like it just... Everyone was getting injured left and right on this. It was a dangerous movie to work on.
Yeah.
I mean, it looks it.
Yeah.
There's a person gets set on fire. Frank Finlay gets set on fire in the second movie. That was really Frank Finlay.
Yeah.
And he got hurt because he gets set on fire.
I mean, they were literally, the set was on fire in the second movie.
The set was on fire and they were just kind of there, just in it, just like fighting in a wooden set that's burning down around them.
Like, if that guy had gotten stuck up there like his character almost did.
They would have just happened to rewritten him out of the movie.
Yeah, they would have been like, well, guess he died of smoke inhalation.
So, Michael York is an honorary musketeer. He's got to sort of work his way into the prove himself to become a real musketeer. And he gets lodging. He gets a servant named Planchet, played by Roy Kinnear, who we figured out was the father of, what's her face? In Willy Wonka.
Veronica. Is that her name?
Veronica? No.
No.
There's no Veronica. Is there a Veronica in Willy Wonka in the Chocolate Factory? There's
one sec.
Violet Beauregard, who's the gum girl, and there is Veruca Salt.
Veruca. You know, yes. I was close.
He plays Veruca Salt's dad in Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. And he plays...
Not the Johnny Depp one.
Not the Johnny Depp one, no. That's a different actor. It's a different movie.
Yes.
He plays Veruca. Oh, yeah. Whatever you say, Veruca. He plays that guy. He's also in... A funny thing happened on the way to the Forum movie. he plays a gladiator trainer in this one scene. And when I was a kid and I used to watch... I watched A Funny Thing Happened a million times. It's one of my... It's a guilty pleasure. It's not that great of a movie, but I just think it's hilarious. And... He plays a gladiator trainer, and he's just so
He's just very straightforward. He's very flat and very just dry. And
he's my favorite character in this movie.
He's hilarious. In the third Three Musketeers movie, The Return of the Musketeers, which brought back most of this cast, directed by Richard Lester in the 1980s, Roy Kinnear returned as Planchet and died filming it. There was a stunt where he was supposed to ride a horse across a cobblestone bridge, and they hadn't had enough time to practice it. And the cobblestones had been wetted down to wash them or something, and they hadn't had enough time to dry because the movie was being made kind of cheaply and as quickly as possible. And the horse went rocketing across the bridge, and it slipped, and it fell, on Roy Kinnear, broke his hip. He died a day later of internal injuries in the hospital. Richard Lester finished the movie, released it, and then retired from filmmaking forever. Because he said after that he killed one of his actors and he couldn't stand himself anymore.
Well, and
so Roy Kinnear, great British comedian, great British comedy actor, killed making the third Three Musketeers movie. These movies are responsible for death, ultimately. And I laugh when I say it, but it is terrible and I feel terrible.
Yeah.
So the plot of this movie. So you said the Cardinal Richelieu wants conflict. The Queen is having an affair with the Duke of Buckingham. And how are they going to prove that she's doing this?
It all seems kind of happenstance.
It seems overly complicated, too.
Well, because, like, they don't know she's going to give him that particular necklace.
Right.
And,
so,
you know,
she's got this necklace made of diamonds.
Yes.
Diamond clusters.
That her husband gave her, the king.
The king, King Louis XIII, same king from The Devils.
Yep. I like to think this takes place at the same time.
It probably does. Roundabout. She has this thing with how many, like, diamond clusters? Like 12 or 13?
I think there was 10.
10. Yes. Because that comes up later on.
Yes.
She gives two of the clusters to Duke of Buckingham.
I don't know why she decided to give him that, because that seems dangerous.
Seems risky. Seems like a thing that people would notice.
Yeah.
And so the plan is to have a ball,
mm-hmm,
and to have the king request she wear that necklace.
Yes.
To the ball. And then when the king sees that the necklace is missing two diamond clusters, Richelieu will have sent Count de Rochefort and his spy to get the diamond clusters back from the Duke of Buckingham and then present the King Louis with the diamond clusters and say, the diamond clusters are missing from her necklace. I have them because I got them back from the Duke of Buckingham, proving that she was having an affair with the Duke of Buckingham. Rather than just say, they're meeting in the laundry room below the castle.
Yeah.
The Duke of Buckingham is literally coming to the castle and secretly meeting the queen in the laundry room in front of like 50 people.
Yep.
There's also a sword fight.
Yes, in the laundry room.
In the laundry room.
I think that it's funny to me. I feel like the servants are all on the queen's side in this.
Except for the one.
Well, she's a spy. She doesn't count.
Yes. There is a spy. I think it's, is it Kitty? Is she the one?
No, Kitty is the milady's servant, isn't she?
Oh, that's right. there's several women in this whose names they don't say that often.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, D'Artagnan has gotten a room at an inn.
Mm-hmm.
The old innkeeper has a young, beautiful wife,
yes,
named Constance, who is the dressmaker for the queen.
Yes.
And also
she's
the queen's
a klutz.
And she's super klutzy. She's the queen's BFF. And she is played by Raquel Welch, who we know from...
I have no idea.
I'll give you a hint. Hello, you are inside my body.
Oh, I can't remember what it's called.
Fantastic Voyage.
My cat is kicking me.
Meow.
They never say, hello, you are inside my body in the Fantastic Voyage, by the way. Although if I ever do a remake of Fantastic Voyage, I'll add that line. But yes, Raquel Welch is the female character in The Fantastic Voyage, which was her first like major role. This is a really big starring role for her. Mm-hmm. And the Count de Rochefort, Christopher Lee, has a spy who works for him named Milady de Winter, mm-hmm. who is played by Faye Dunaway. Milady de Winter, for those of you who don't know, is one of the most famous villains in literary history.
She's great.
Yeah, and Faye Dunaway is incredible as Milady de Winter. And she is going to go to seduce the Duke of Buckingham and get the jewels from him to present to the king to prove that Anne, Queen Anne, played by the beautiful Geraldine Chaplin, gave Duke of Buckingham those clusters. Oh, also, there's three musketeers, apparently, in this story.
Four.
Four, if you count the fourth one who hasn't been musketeered yet.
True.
So how does this all come to play? How does this all, like, come together?
So what happens is the queen finds out about the plan somehow.
Yes.
I can't remember how.
Right.
Oh, the ball. The king is like, I want you to wear that necklace for the ball. And she's
exactly.
like, oh, shit.
But the king is not aware of the plan.
No, he's just being manipulated by Richelieu. Is that his name?
So Richelieu is sort of setting all this up. Everyone knows mm-hmm. what's going on except King Louis the 13th. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's just kind of a fool.
Yeah, I mean, that's what he is.
Also, he's played by Jean-Pierre Cassel, who didn't speak English very well. All of his lines are dubbed.
I could tell.
In case he didn't know.
But basically, she's like, I gotta get word to the Duke, but I don't know who to trust. And Constance is like, hey, I know who you can trust, this guy I've been sleeping with.
Right. And so explain the dynamic, how D'Artagnan, just explain that dynamic for the sake of the audience, how weird the romance between D'Artagnan and Constance is.
So her husband and Constance get arrested.
Right.
And she escapes.
Uh-huh.
And comes back to the inn and is freaking out.
Yes.
And D'Artagnan, like, comforts her.
Yeah.
And then they have sex.
Right. And the husband, who is the old innkeeper, played by Spike Milligan, very famous British comedian, mm-hmm. he ends up working for Richelieu mm-hmm. To spy on his own wife. Constance and D'Artagnan end up kind of an item.
Yeah.
And then Spike Milligan's character just kind of disappears after a while.
Yeah.
Like, once he's not needed anymore, we don't really find out what happens to the innkeeper.
Maybe he died.
Maybe he died. He was about 100 years old.
Yeah.
So Milady de Winter is the spy for Count de Rochefort, who is working for Cardinal Richelieu, who is manipulating King Louis XIII of France. Meanwhile, again, there's three musketeers who are the title characters, not really doing much in the plot.
I haven't finished yet. We haven't explained how they all tie together.
How do the three musketeers figure into this?
Well, what is his name?
D'Artagnan.
D'Artagnan. Constance talks to him and is like, hey, can you take this letter to the Duke?
Right.
And he's like, yeah, sure, why not? But he needs help getting there, so he asks the musketeers to come with him.
Yes.
That's that.
That's it. He just needs backup.
Mm-hmm.
For a lot of this movie, the musketeers are just kind of, they're funny, they're Athos is moody and drunk, Porthos is a fop, Aramis is pure of heart, and they're all somewhat good fighters. They're better at, like, stealing food.
That was an amazing scene, though.
There's a sequence where they pretend to get into a fight in an inn to steal food because I believe Porthos has lost all their money gambling.
Yes.
And which is something he does. So they steal by pretending to get into fights and mm-hmm. using that as a way of secreting funds and food and wine.
Yes.
So you know that they're good fighters.
Mm-hmm.
But they also almost all get killed. Or they all almost get killed by the end of this movie.
Yeah.
To the degree where you kind of believe they are all dead at one point. And so does D'Artagnan. It's a plot point. D'Artagnan has to go and... Is this the movie where Constance gets kidnapped or is that the second one? That's the second one.
That's the second one.
The second one's the one where they have to rescue her. Is the second one the one where they have to rescue her out of the second story window and they rescue her on stilts?
Yes.
Okay. This is the movie where Constance... They still have to rescue Constance in this movie, though.
Kind of. She's with the queen, while the queen's freaking out about the jewels.
Yes.
And she leaves the room to go to another room, and De Winter attacks her.
That's right. De Winter attacks her with a claw hidden in a fan, and she looks like Vega from Street Fighter.
But then Constance's natural clumsiness comes in handy.
Of course it does.
Because it's amazing.
The thing about Constance is in the novel, she's just a really smart, really nice woman. In the movie, she is a blundering dunderhead who accidentally trips and falls her way into every victory. Mm-hmm. So setting up, because she is so charming, because she's played Raquel well, she's so pretty, she and D'Artagnan have this chemistry, and she always accidentally saves the day with her own clumsiness, it sets it up that in the very end of this movie, she is probably going to do something grand and exciting, or at the end of both movies, something grand and exciting that will end up saving the day, saving herself, just through a sheer act of sheer buffoonery. That is not what happens to Constance.
No.
No.
Not at all.
Not at all. Just spoiler warning. So what they end up doing is and I don't know why they didn't think of this would happen, but the Duke of Buckingham is just like, oh, like we'll just make some extra jewels. Like,
yeah,
she had these two jewels are missing. We'll just make extra jewels. Like, we're all very rich people.
Yep.
So here, some extra jewels.
No. She gives him the entire necklace, and then De Winter steals two of the jewels off of it.
Is that what it is?
Yes.
That's what it is.
Because they're like, she's going to send someone to go get the necklace, and we need to make sure that it's still noticeable.
That's what made it even more confusing to me. That's what was confusing to me, was that she gave an entire necklace to to the Duke of Buckingham, and then Lady De Winter was like, I'm going to steal two jewels off of it and show that to the king and be like, check these jewels out. I got them from the Duke of Buckingham. Obviously, they're from this necklace. Obviously, Anne of Austria gave them to the Duke of Buckingham. Obviously, X, Y, and Z.
No, I don't think that was the plan at all.
What was the plan? See, I'm so confused.
I think what they planned to do was De Winter was going to steal the jewels from the necklace. They were going to present them to the king and then say, hey, check the queen's necklace to see if those jewels are there.
Right. But she didn't have the necklace.
No, but just in case.
Why did
if she came back without the necklace, then something was obviously wrong.
Why didn't Queen Anne just say, somebody stole my necklace?
No idea.
It's a very expensive necklace. It's made of clusters of diamonds.
Mm-hmm. Probably because she didn't want to get anyone else in trouble.
Doesn't it make more sense, though, that somebody would have stolen the necklace than like, yeah, but if she had been caught out, she would have been like executed.
That's true.
And like England and France would have gone to war, which ends up happening anyway.
Yeah.
So they end up making two new jewels. She ends up with 12 jewels.
She goes to the dance with the necklace after an amazing fight scene.
Yes.
And the king tries to count the jewels while they're dancing, but he freaks out because he can't.
Yes.
So he has everyone stop. He counts the jewels and he's like, there's 10 here. And then he presents her the two jewels and she's like, you got me two more? That's amazing.
Yeah. And they're like, all right, that's good.
And then Milady is upset a lot,
yes,
at Farm Boy and his girlfriend.
Right. Milady's hard to read. You sort of get the sense that she's kind of like has a thing for D'Artagnan a little bit. She's she's intrigued by him. He's young. He's Michael York.
She's a sore loser.
Mm-hmm.
But Richelieu is just like, well, that didn't work. Oh, well.
Right. Richelieu just wants everything to go his way, but he's never going to lose his temper.
Yeah. He's and a pretty chill guy.
And because they save the day, more or less, in the end of the movie, Michael York gets made into a musketeer.
Yee.
So that's the end of the first movie. And then they're like, see you next year with the four musketeers. And this story, the story of, and you pointed this out, the movie is actually called The Three Musketeers, The Queen's Diamonds. This is the story that a lot of Three Musketeers movies adapt, and they like sprinkle in a little bit of the rest of the book, but a lot of it focuses on getting these diamonds back.
Yeah.
Cause it's kind of a heist. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a good heist story.
expand, or they sort of mush the two stories together, the two plot threads that these movies make. They kind of just like overlap them and weave them in and out, and like take some elements from one and sprinkle it into the other.
Yeah.
This movie is just like, nope, we're just gonna cut it in half.
Yeah.
So then the Four Musketeers. So this movie comes out. It gets great reviews. People love it. This movie does really well. Everyone loves it except for you. Everyone loves it except for me. Yeah, I mean, so this movie comes out. Everyone is like, it's so funny. It's so action-filled. We have never seen a movie like this in modern times, and it's true. The last time we had like a huge, huge Three Musketeers movie was like the 1930s. It was like a silent film. There have been many movies of the Three Musketeers made, but the last truly successful one that people considered like the big one was like 20-something, 30-something. It's the one that people were just like, heck yes, we love this movie. 1932, I believe, was the one that people considered the last great one. So they've been waiting for a while. In between the 1932 Three Musketeers, we had had 1933's Three Musketeers.
Yeah.
1935's Three Musketeers. 1939's Three Musketeers. 1942's Three Musketeers. 1946's Three Musketeers. 1948's Three Musketeers, 1953's Three Musketeers, 1959's Three Musketeers, 1961's Three Musketeers, and 1969's Three Musketeers. So as you can see, there was a big call.
Nice.
The 69 Musketeers.
I had a really delayed reaction to that.
So as you can see, there was a lot of people just champing at the bit for a new Three Musketeers. We hadn't had one in a couple of months. Not to mention the 1966 television series, The Three Musketeers, and the 1968 television series, The Three Musketeers. Or the cartoon, Dog Tanyan and the Three Muskhounds, which came later.
What I'm like trying an to- Animal Crossing character.
Dog Tanyan and the Three Muskhounds.
Yeah.
Yeah. Would you believe that ran for 26 episodes?
I would.
Yes. It's Japanese. It's a cartoon about the Three Musketeers, only they're all dogs.
That sounds amazing.
In any case, 1 year later, the Four Musketeers drops.
Mm-hmm.
And the world was never the same.
Really?
No, it was completely the same. Nothing changed except that... people were like, oh, we can do this now. and so what happens in the Four Musketeers?
De Winter wants revenge.
Yeah. In fact, it is called The Four Musketeers, Milady's revenge. Yes.
So she hires, she doesn't hire anyone. She gets the eye patch man to kidnap Constance. Is that her name?
Yeah. Kidnaps Constance.
And then she somehow, D'Artagnan gets knocked out.
Yeah.
On potatoes. Yep. Literally what happens.
We should set the scene, by the way. This is during, now it is during the Anglo-French War.
Yes.
Which was
The French
are trying to suppress the Protestants, the Protestant rebels, at La Rochelle, which is kind of a big deal. There's this town of La Rochelle. And so the Musketeers are now kind of in everyone's good graces because they're fighting for the French.
Mm-hmm.
There's kind of there's a war going on. And yeah. Okay.
They make a lot of jokes about religious war in this.
Yes. And,
which is good.
It's actually Cardinal Richelieu tells Count de Rochefort to kidnap Constance. And Milady is the one who kind of helps out with that. She wants revenge on D'Artagnan.
Why does he want to kidnap Constance?
Because she is still the second in, like, the best friend of the queen.
Right. Yeah.
Like, Constance knows a lot just because she has the queen's ear.
Mm-hmm.
And so she is kidnapped. Now, female lead, female love interest of D'Artagnan, the main guy, the central character, female love interest kidnapped.
Mm-hmm.
By an evil man who you know is into torture.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, what's going to happen is they're going to immediately spring into action and try to rescue this poor woman. Right?
Nope.
Right?
Nope.
What happens?
There's a lot of stuff. He spends some time with M'lady.
Uh-huh.
He sleeps with M'lady a lot. Yeah. He tries to get people to help him, and they're just like, no, don't worry about it.
Yeah.
She's just your mistress. It's fine.
Yes. D'Artagnan sleeps with a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. I think that's just a musketeer thing.
It's something that's usually cut from adaptations of this book.
Which I think is stupid.
D'Artagnan usually, because like he sleeps with Constance. He begins having a relationship with her. She's still married to his like landlord.
Mm-hmm.
And that's usually changed to like her being the landlord's niece mm-hmm. in other adaptations. He usually doesn't sleep with M'lady. He usually just like spurns her advances. Like there's a lot of just like, oh yeah, like my girlfriend's kidnapped. I can just sleep with anyone. Like that's just it's kind of like his attitude. There's no scandal around it. It's just like they're treating it as if this is just.
I think that's again just like something that men did.
Right. Did. And
some still do.
Okay, so here we go. So M'lady kidnaps D'Artagnan, seduces him, he's always coming to her place and bringing her flowers.
Mm-hmm. And then he sleeps with her maid.
He sleeps with her maid, who warns him that M'lady is like gonna kill Constance.
Mm-hmm.
And also we find out that Athos, the musketeer played by Oliver Reed, mm-hmm. used to be married to M'lady.
Yeah.
Who tried to kill her?
Tried to kill him.
No, no, no. He tried to kill M'lady.
No.
Yes, you see him strangling her.
I don't think he tried to kill her. I think that was us misunderstanding the thing.
No, no, no. It's true. We did not misunderstand that at all.
I thought the whole thing was she was trying to kill him for seeing her mark, and he was trying to fight back.
Nope. She's been branded a criminal in the past.
Uh-huh.
He figures it out, sees the brand, somehow hasn't seen it yet.
She wears a thing around her arm.
But still, like, they've apparently, like, been in a relationship for a while. He sees it, and he tries to kill her, and thinks he has. He's like, you have disgraced me, and he tries to strangle her to death, and he's like, yep, and I totally killed her. Not realizing that she's still alive.
Yeah. Even though he knew her name, and he knows that D'Artagnan is seeing someone named M'lady. And also that D'Artagnan has her necklace.
Right. He doesn't see that until later.
No.
But, so the three musketeers go and rescue Constance using stilts.
Mm-hmm.
And they take her to a nunnery, a convent.
Hey, she kicks the guards in the balls a few times.
She does. She does a lot of crotch kicks. Mm-hmm. Including one of the musketeers.
Yes.
Something that made you laugh.
Yeah.
So they push her out the window and she lands on the shoulders of a musketeer and we're like, what? And then you realize the musketeer is on stilts.
Mm-hmm.
But then dogs attack the stilts.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're okay. Then they get away.
Yeah.
We don't see how. That's like the one of the things they don't show is how they get away, but they just do.
Yep.
So here's where we have a little intrigue. So D'Artagnan gets a note that the three musketeers have been arrested.
Mm-hmm.
Saying that the three musketeers have been arrested for drunkenness.
Yes.
And here is some wine that they have sent you.
Mm-hmm.
Drink it.
Yeah.
And he is like, you know what? I can't let them sit around. I got to go bail them out of jail. So I'm not going to sit here and drink this wine. I'm going to go save my buddies. On the way to save them, of course, they're not in jail.
Yeah.
He gets ambushed. There's another big fight.
On the ice.
On the ice. It's an ice fight.
It's amazing.
On real ice, apparently, I guess. Because they're actually sliding around on it a lot.
And then they crash through it.
Yes. And then they're like, it's a long fight. Did you enjoy this fight?
I enjoyed it for a while.
And then it goes on.
And it goes on a bit. Then it goes on a bit long, like a lot of scenes in this movie.
Also, we should note that the tone of these movies goes from like wacky slapstick, like barrels falling on people's heads and people getting kicked in the crotch, to like people getting like stabbed and bleeding out while like screaming in terror that they're going to die.
Yep.
Like it's tonally all over the place.
And
like,
sometimes it doesn't switch tones. It just keeps the same tone with different situations.
Yeah, sometimes like really horrible things are happening to people, but the music is going wah 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 wah, and you're like, oh no. Yeah, this is it's a strange feeling of this movie. And some people say that that's Richard Lester. Some people say that that's George MacDonald Fraser, who wrote the screenplay. I
say it works.
He was a novelist. He wrote the Flashman novels. And Richard Lester wanted to make a Flashman movie, but he couldn't get the film funded because nobody cares about Flashman, the Flashman novels.
I don't even know what that is.
Nobody knows what it is. It's science fiction. And so instead he was like, well, I still like your writing. So do you want to write the screenplay for the Three Musketeers and the Four Musketeers? And he was like, I've never written a screenplay before. And he was like, doesn't matter. And then he went on to write a bunch of other movies. But a lot of people say that that sort of like weird tonal inconsistency is also a George MacDonald Fraser thing, that he does a lot of like big wampin high body count fights, but also that like there's like this sort of like snarky, like weird attitude about him. So who knows?
I liked it. I thought you're a big fan. Mostly because I like dark comedy.
Yeah.
It's not a typical comedy, which is probably why I liked it.
So they end up, okay, so the Musketeers realize that this whole thing was a setup. They also realize that the wine that got sent to D'Artagnan was poisoned. They realize
after their prisoner drinks some and dies.
Right. They took a prisoner that from the fight. They torture him.
Yeah.
Because these are our heroes. And they find out that Richelieu is at the Dovecote Inn near La Rochelle. Mm-hmm. They also don't drink the wine because the guy drinks it and dies because he's very thirsty.
Which means that everyone who drank the wine who he left behind in the station is also dead.
Right.
Because we see them afterwards going for the wine.
Hey, you know what? It's a hard knock life.
For us.
It's a hard knock life.
For us.
No one knows. No one cares for you a bit when you're a musketeer. Okay, so there's this whole thing going on also with, okay, so Milady de Winter is going to threaten the Duke of Buckingham about exposing his affair with the Queen, and that she's supposed to kill the Duke if he doesn't call off his, like, forces, basically.
Mm-hmm.
But Milady's like, if I'm going to kill the Duke, you've got to let me kill D'Artagnan and Constance. Mm-hmm. And so I need a warrant for their arrest. So Richelieu gives her a warrant for their arrest and execution.
Reluctantly.
But he says, and he signs it, quote, by my order and for the good of the state, the bearer has done what has been done. And that's all it says.
Mm-hmm.
So it gives Richelieu an out so that he doesn't have to like
justify.
Yes. It's he thinks it's genius on his part. Will this come back to bite him later on?
Yes.
Wait and see, my friends. Okay. All right. And so now the whole plot becomes about this death warrant, mm-hmm. this warrant for execution that kind of starts getting stolen by people and going from hand to hand because the musketeers are spying on Richelieu, so they know what he's up to.
Well, it doesn't get stolen. It gets stolen once.
Okay.
It gets stolen by old Luke Skywalker.
Right.
Because he corners Milady in her room.
Yes.
And is like, I will gut you if you don't give me that. And you know I will, because you know me.
Yes, because I tried to kill you once before, and I didn't quite do it. So D'Artagnan sends Planchette to warn the Duke
mm-hmm.
of the assassination.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. De Winter is going to kill the Duke. She gets captured, thrown into prison. With a guy named Felton, who is like the head of the prison. And Felton,
I don't understand what his character was supposed to be.
Felton is this like weird, extremely tall, kind of homely guy mm-hmm. who's very religious.
Yeah.
And they have this whole like mini film within a film.
Yep.
Where she pretends to be all penitent and sad.
She pretends to be a Protestant.
Yes.
Or is she? We don't know.
We don't know, because she's very smart and she's very good at what she does.
Mm-hmm.
She ends up basically seducing him and convincing him to let her go.
Because she says that the king or the duke is actually going to turn against the Protestants and fight with France.
Right. And this guy is like dumb.
Yeah.
I guess. because he's like, all right. He helps her escape on a boat, and then what does he do?
Stabs the Duke.
He actually kills the Duke of Buckingham.
Mm-hmm.
Now, interestingly enough, in real life, and historically, the Duke of Buckingham was murdered like that, just like that, by mm-hmm. a guy named Felton, who was not his like jailer, was not a jailer, who was a soldier who had been disgraced. And part of the reason people think that he stabbed Buckingham had to do with something about Buckingham. It's like Felton actually was like having an affair with a guy.
Oh.
Or Buckingham was having an affair with a guy. It had to do with like two guys who were like sleeping together.
Okay.
And one person blackmailing another person. And I mean, it's far more plot than we could put into the Four Musketeers.
Hey, maybe they were sleeping together.
Maybe they were. Maybe that's a movie we should see.
I don't want to see that movie.
Because that guy was weird.
Yeah.
That Felton guy, not, I mean, he wasn't an ugly guy. He was just weird looking. And like, it was a very strange scene. So yeah. Buckingham gets stabbed to death in front of everyone. Mm-hmm. I assume Felton gets arrested.
Yeah.
Planchette is there to warn him, but he's too late. He's like, sees it happen.
Yeah.
All right. So what happens next? This is a long, okay. This movie is just as long as the second one, but like three times as much stuff happens in it.
You mean the first one?
The first one, yes. The second movie is it's just as long as the first one. More stuff happens in it. A lot of stuff happens in it. And it happens when people just sort of yelling what is happening.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Constance is at the convent.
Mm-hmm.
Everything kind of like comes to the convent.
Mm-hmm.
Rochefort shows up there. And the three musketeers show up there. The four musketeers show up there. And everyone starts fighting.
Actually, first, De Winter shows up there.
And what does she do?
She strangles Constance.
Okay, so you say she strangles Constance, but what you mean is she starts strangling Constance, and then Constance fights back, and through the use of her clumsiness gets away.
No.
What you actually mean is she begins strangling Constance, but then one of the musketeers, like D'Artagnan, bursts in and saves Constance.
No.
Okay, what you mean is Milady de Winter busts in, grabs Constance, starts strangling her, but then has a change of heart, and they join forces and end up fighting Rochefort.
No.
Well, what happens then?
She dies.
So what you're saying is, Milady de Winter, after two movies, after more than 3 hours of film, Milady de Winter bursts into Constance's room, pretending to be a nun,
mm-hmm.
convinces Constance to pray, and while Constance is praying to God, praying to her God, fashions a rosary into a garret, and strangles Constance to death, only to have her body discovered by D'Artagnan?
Yep.
That's very dark. That's a dark thing.
All the while, wacky music is playing during the fight scene.
Right. There's a wacky fight going on. D'Artagnan gets upset.
Yeah.
And has a duel with Rochefort.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens?
He kills him.
He doesn't. Because he returns in Return of the Musketeers.
Well, he supposedly kills him.
He supposedly dies in this movie. When I read that, I was like, well, that's disappointing. but yeah, there's a huge fight, a very angry fight. D'Artagnan has this big, long fight. He gets very injured during the fight.
Yeah, one of the musketeers wants to step in, but what's his name? Old Luke Skywalker says no.
Yes. Old Luke Skywalker says no. To Porthos, who wants to step in.
Mm-hmm.
Bear in mind, there are other musketeers.
Mm-hmm.
There's Porthos, Athos, and Aramis. Bear in mind, this movie is called The Three and Four Musketeers. It's easy to forget that they're in this at points.
Yep.
Even though they have some big fights, the musketeers themselves don't do much.
Yeah.
Plot-wise. In fact, Athos being Milady de Winter's ex is like kind of like weird and unbalanced, because it's like, what does he have to do with this story? So De Winter gets taken by the musketeers.
Mm-hmm.
Rochefort is presumably dead.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens to Milady de Winter? Probably something hilarious.
She gets
a pie in the face?
Nope.
She gets thrown off a building and lands in a pile of poop?
Nope.
She tries to escape but falls down in a pig pen and gets covered in mud?
Nope.
What happens to her?
She gets her head cut off.
By who?
An executioner.
So she gets put into a little boat and sailed to, I guess, Beheading Island, which is just on the other side of this river. She's very upset and she's crying and like pleading for her life. Mm-hmm. And then this executioner takes her to this little island, cuts her head off, and then comes back and charges them extra for the execution.
No, because, extra for the boat ride.
Well, because he had to sail, like row a boat. And he's like, I'm not a sailor. And he goes off. And I'm like, well, this is very dark. It's very grim. Like, it's just, she's the bad guy, but man, that's just like, wow.
I feel bad for her.
Almost, yeah.
No, I
almost feel bad for her. In some versions of the story, she kills herself. Don't know why. But in some versions, they actually have her kill herself.
Well, because she didn't start, like, going super hard at killing them.
Right.
Before D'Artagnan saw her mark.
Yeah.
Which I think is residual trauma from her almost being murdered by her husband.
Yeah, you gotta, once you find out about that, like the whole like sort of like dynamic shifts a little bit. And you're like, this sucks. Like, what? Like she was branded. You see her get branded in a flashback. Like she's been traumatized. And then her husband, her soon to be husband is like, you were a criminal once? And then he tries to strangle her to death.
Because, like, she stole because she was poor and living on the streets.
Yeah. So, yeah. So, and then she became, like, a killer for hire, which is kind of rad. Like, it's a great, like, villain origin story.
Yeah. She's not a killer for hire. Because she doesn't always kill.
But she has many killer for hire.
Yeah, but I feel like her job description is a lot more than that.
Well, okay. That's one of her duties. She will for a little extra kill for hire. Mm-hmm. She's a spy.
Yeah.
And a troublemaker. Professional troublemaker. A really good one. So, D'Artagnan's been charged with murder because he killed Rochefort. Apparently, he does not kill Rochefort, but we find out
D'Artagnan
later.
D'Artagnan and the rest of the musketeers.
Yes. But what happens?
He pulls out this warrant.
Yes.
And it's like, but you gave me permission to do so.
Which is funny because then Richelieu, who is he's talking to, tears up the warrant. Mm-hmm. And I thought, I was like, oh, right. It's like the 1600s. That's the only copy of the warrant. Mm-hmm. All Richelieu has to do is destroy it and then just keep on arresting him.
Yep.
But Richelieu was apparently like, clever boy, you're free to go.
Well, I think it's because Richelieu, well, De Winter was chaotic evil. Richelieu's lawful evil.
True.
He's not going to break the king's law to get what he wants.
Right.
Because that would be dishonorable.
And he also does he also punishes him by giving him a commission to become an officer of the musketeers that he can use for himself or any of his friends.
Yeah.
And I think Richelieu knew that this is the best way to split up the musketeers, making one of them an officer, because then he'll be their boss and they won't like him anymore. Mm-hmm. But what happens?
What's his face? D'Artagnan is like, I don't want to be an officer, so I will ask one of the other musketeers.
Yeah.
And then they're all like, we don't want to be officers. You should do it.
Yeah. And then what happens?
Then he's like, fine, whatever.
He is like, fine, whatever. The end.
Pretty much.
He's like, fine, whatever. They become the three musketeers, or the four musketeers, and their boss. Mm-hmm. Well, he's like, you're going to be our boss. He's like, oh, we'll be your boss. You won't like me anymore. And they're like, we'll like you. We'll still like you. You're still a good guy.
Also, I don't think they can have a boss. I don't think the dynamic works like that. Yeah. I feel like in title, yes, he will be their boss, but he's not going to care what they do.
Yeah. And what are they going to do? Arrest them? Fire them? Can't fire these guys. Have you ever met these guys?
They're not even, they might not even technically be a part of the...
Yeah, we don't really know what's going on. Are they still at war? I'm really not sure what's happening at this point.
There is an amazing lunch scene, though.
What happens during the lunch scene?
They make a bet with one of the officers, like, for the finest food at the camp. We bet you we will have breakfast, not lunch.
Yeah.
At this super, super duper dangerous location.
Yes.
And that's how they get to talking about a plan.
Right. They do all their plans. It is a great scene. It's very, they end up like, again, accompanied by wacky music, they push a bunch of like heavy stones down on a bunch of guys and kill them.
Yeah, but they also throw bread at them.
They throw bread at them.
Well, they hit bombs away with bread.
Yes, bombs fly up and they hit them away with hard bread until, wackily, one of the bombs sticks in the bread.
Yeah.
And then there's like craziness. But then they push a whole bunch of stones down these men and murder them.
Yep.
Like kill them terribly.
Yep.
And meanwhile, the score by Lalo Schifrin, great film score, great jazz musician, who did many, 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 many movies, up to and including Rush Hour 3. and he did a bunch of Dirty Harry movies. He did the Amityville Horror, the Deadpool. He did not Deadpool, but The Deadpool, which is a Dirty Harry movie. Magnum Force, a lot of like Clint Eastwood movies. Enter the Dragon. Mm-hmm. Lalo Schifrin, he did a lot of movies around, especially the late 60s to the early 80s. He was really known for his stuff. But meanwhile, as they pull all these heavy stones down onto these men and kill them all horribly, crying for their mothers, the music's all like, wah, wah, wah.
Yeah. As all yes. things should be.
Yes.
I want that soundtrack for my life.
Wah, wah, wah.
It would make my life feel much better.
Did we mention that Milady de Winter was played by Faye Dunaway?
Yes, we did multiple times.
Did we? Because she's great.
Yeah, she is.
Did we mention that Rochefort was played by Christopher Lee?
Yes.
Yes, we had a whole conversation about it. I'm trying to figure out who all from this movie is still alive. Faye Dunaway is still alive. She's 79. Mm-hmm. We know her from Mommy Dearest. We know her from the movie Barfly, Eyes of Laura Mars, 3 Days of the Condor, Network, Towering Inferno.
I've never seen any of those movies.
I believe this was one of her first big roles. She had done Thomas Crown Affair. She had done The Arrangement, Little Big Man. This was a big role for her. Geraldine Chaplin, who played Anne of Austria, is still alive.
Who's Anne of Austria?
The Queen.
Oh, okay.
She played the Queen. You know her from Nashville. You know her from the movie. But her big thing was in the movie Chaplin, which is a biopic about Charlie Chaplin, starring Robert Downey Jr. as Chaplin, 1992. Geraldine Chaplin, do you recognize the last name?
Yes.
Geraldine Chaplin played her own grandmother, Hannah Chaplin.
Oh, dang.
In the biopic Chaplin. And I believe we've mentioned Geraldine Chaplin. I think we talked about her when we did a Charlie Chaplin movie. I think somehow that came up. I don't remember. She's Charlie Chaplin's.
Say? Sorry.
She's Charlie Chaplin's. Okay. She's the daughter of Charlie Chaplin. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Geraldine Chaplin, who is in this movie. So I remember we talked about her for some reason.
Didn't we do that one movie?
We did a Charlie Chaplin movie. Not City Lights. The one with the machinery.
Jesus Christ.
The one with the gamine.
One sec. We did Modern Times.
We did Modern Times. But I was wrong. We did not discuss her during Modern Times. We brought up that she was the daughter of Charlie Chaplin because she was in the movie The Orphanage.
Did she play the wooden leg?
No, that's... you're thinking of The Devil's Backbone. She's in The Orphanage as the medium who comes to the house.
I have very little memory of that movie, I'm going to be honest.
Okay, they invite a medium to the house to try to find the missing child, the boy who disappears, the son when he disappears. And she's played by Geraldine Chaplin. And I remember us discussing this when we did the movie because... Guillermo del Toro was a huge fan of course, Charlie Chaplin, and he helped get Geraldine Chaplin in the movie just kind of as a nod to, you know, one of his favorite filmmakers, helped J.A. Bayona get that made. So that was a long conversation. Richard Chamberlain is in this movie, and I believe he was offered the role of D'Artagnan, but he was like, dude, I'm too old at this point. Mm-hmm. So he turned down D'Artagnan and ended up playing Aramis. He's still alive. Christopher Lee, of course, died in 2015. We all miss him very much. And yeah, Richard Lester is still alive, but he's just not making movies.
Yeah.
Yeah. What did you think of the Three and Four Musketeers?
I loved them.
You loved them.
I love swashbuckling.
You love buckling swashes.
It's so fun.
Yeah?
It's my favorite kind of action.
Uh-huh.
Because it's just fun.
I liked them less than you.
I know.
I did not dislike them. I thought they were a little messy for my taste.
Mm-hmm.
But I appreciate swashbuckling more having seen these movies than I did going into these movies.
See, I love swashbuckling so much that whenever I play a character in D&D, that's the kind of action they're involved in.
I was going to ask, actually, D&D wise, would you do a Three Musketeers campaign?
Oh, hell yeah. That'd be so fun.
Which character would you play from these movies if you were doing a campaign set in this universe?
If I was doing a campaign set in the universe, I wouldn't have to play one of the characters, right?
Well, suppose these were all... Suppose you had to play one of these characters.
Well, if all of the characters...
In a role-playing campaign.
If all the characters were player characters...
Yes.
I'd probably play Constance.
Really? Why yeah. Constance?
Because I think that she could have a lot of fun as a D&D character.
Yeah?
Like, her dex would be super low.
Uh-huh.
But somehow she always manages to come, get the upper hand in a fight.
Yeah, how would you, like...
Well, I've played characters with low dexterity.
Okay, but how would that be a benefit? How would you do that, role-wise?
Well, it's like... See, you'd still have to roll well to do, like, a save and stuff.
Right.
And if you rolled well enough on a dex save, it would probably be like you accidentally slip and just manage to dodge the fireball. Or like, oh, you stepped on this guy's foot and he fell and landed on a sword. Just like stuff like that.
Well, in addition to the 24 or so Three Musketeers movies that exist... there's also the novel 20 Years After, which is set 20 years after Three Musketeers, by Alexandre Dumas, which has been made into the movies The Return of the Musketeers in 89 and Musketeers 20 Years After in 92.
Yeah.
He also wrote a novel that's set 10 years, called The Viscount of Braglione, 10 years later, which has been made into the movie The Iron Mask,
mm-hmm.
The Man in the Iron Mask, mm-hmm. Lady in the Iron Mask.
Yep.
The Man in the Iron, a bunch of Man in the Iron Mask, The Fifth Musketeer, The Secret of Queen Anne, and again, 98's The Man in the Iron Mask, starring the boy. Who's the boy? The little boy. Who's the guy? The man from Titanic. What's his name? Leo DiCaprio.
Yeah.
The Man in the Iron Mask. But again, with very old musketeers, like mm-hmm. the musketeers in that are very old. There's other sequels, movies called At Swords Point, Dark Mark of D'Artagnan, Revenge of the Musketeers, La Femme Musketeer, Return of the Musketeers. One of the most recent musketeer movies, I believe it was the one made in 2013, makes the whole thing steampunk.
Nice.
And with a lot of airships. Like, I think the whole thing is about Cardinal Richelieu like trying to steal the plans for a super airship.
That sounds like a Doctor Who episode.
It's not supposed to be very good.
Sounds like a Doctor Who episode.
Tom and Jerry played there were Mouseketeers episodes of Tom and Jerry, which are very famous.
Mm-hmm.
Mickey, Donald, and Goofy played the Three Musketeers in 2004. And Barbie and the Three Musketeers.
Yes, I was just about to say, wasn't there a Barbie movie?
2009, which seems like it might be a little, well, I don't know, you were like seven when that came out?
Yeah, I think I watched it with Tori in Texas.
Yes. So it's about a girl named Connie, of course, Constance, uh-huh. who wants to be a musketeer like her father, and she tries to be a musketeer, but she cannot. And apparently there's a hot air balloon invention. There is a lot of stuff with secret passageways,
mm-hmm.
and all the musketeers are women,
mm-hmm.
which is great. And apparently there's a lot of stuff with hot air balloons. And I doubt many people die in it.
I think that's the only Musketeer movie I saw before this one.
Bit of trivia. The part when Corrine is her name? Corrine accidentally falls on each of the three girls and makes them angry. Mm-hmm. Alludes to the beginning of the novel where D'Artagnan accidentally runs into each of the musketeers, unintentionally upsetting each man and earning himself a challenge to a duel. Mm-hmm. So it's just like the book. Corrine, Renee, Vivica, Aramina.
Okay.
Tim Curry's in it.
Cool. We're going to have to end soon because the sun is directly in my eyes.
We are going to have to end soon. But what did our friend Guillermo del Toro have to say?
Apparently not much, according to you earlier.
About this movie. He was asked during an interview, you know, what he thought of, you know, about these movies. Because he does consider these, like, seminal films, like, in his, like, upbringing. And he says, what a flawless adventure saga. Every cast member is perfection. And for a geek like me, to have Christopher Lee and Oliver Reed in the same film is pure uncut joy. A great series that was born of a terrible idea to use it as a vehicle for the Beatles. It is incredibly modern, given that it is now over 40 years old. It makes me lament again and again that we don't have its creator, Richard Lester, working in our industry anymore.
Boom. Sorry for the outburst there in the middle of your sentence.
Uh-huh.
My cat attacked me.
That's okay. I thought you were referring to what Guillermo del Toro said. So said every cast member is perfection, and you're all, Jesus Christ. Like, well, they were all pretty good.
No, my cat attacked me.
That's okay. So yeah, so Guillermo del Toro, huge fan, obviously huge fan. Richard Lester went on to do Robin and Marian, a Robin Hood movie that's very actually quite good about an older. Okay. What?
My cat is lunging at me.
Okay.
As we speak.
He went on to do Robin and Marian, 1976, about an older Robin Hood and Maid Marian, starring famous people. I can't remember who. Who's the guy who played? He played James Bond. What's his name?
Sean Connery. Know.
Sean Connery and Audrey Hepburn and Robert Shaw. And it's sorry, I couldn't think of anyone's names. Butch and Sundance, the early days, a prequel to Butch Cassidy and Sundance Kid. He did Superman 2, Superman 3, Return of the Musketeers in 1989. Then he stopped making film. He did the movie Get Back, a Paul McCartney concert film, but the last motion picture he did was Return of the Musketeer. He is still with us. He still does interviews. He still does retrospectives of his films. But Richard Lester. I would say, even though this isn't my favorite movie we've ever done. Better than Fantasia. It's on Amazon Prime. Both of them are on Amazon Prime for like just a few bucks. Mm-hmm. And that's how we saw them. You can also buy it's either a DVD or a Blu-ray that has both films on it. It's mm-hmm. pretty bare bones, just both movies, but apparently they look pretty good. They're nicely restored, so.
The Amazon Prime one looks pretty good, too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. On Amazon Prime, it was just fine. So if you want to buy them that way, go ahead. I think they're worth seeing. I think they're really worth seeing. Like, again, not as excited about them as you were, but I thoroughly enjoyed them.
Jesus Christ.
Are you having trouble with your new cat?
Yeah.
Poor child. I thought that the Flashman novels were science fiction. They're not science fiction. They're historical fiction. I don't know anything.
Nice segue there.
I was confusing it with?
What?
I was confusing the Flashman novels with the Lensman novels, which are definitely science fiction. So, flashing, lenses, who knows? The Flashman novels are not set in science fiction space. They are set in the past. So, sorry, everyone. Yes. So, in any case, Ollie, what is our next movie?
Hopefully The Beehive.
Hopefully The Beehive, but I'm not going to hold out hope for it simply because... I don't know how I'm going to get it. Deliveries on things, supplies on things are kind of weird right now. So if I can't get my hands on The Spirit of the Beehive, which I do dearly want to see, I think our next movie is going to have to be Kung 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 Kung.
Kung Fu Panda.
You wish. You wish we were seeing Kung Fu Panda.
Now, yeah, I do.
The next movie on our list is going to be 1974's Phantom of the Paradise, which I cannot wait to watch with you.
I wish it was Kung Fu Panda.
It is not Kung Fu Panda. Phantom of the Paradise, a trippy, weird, rock and roll, horror, just strange, dark little film.
We saw Kung Fu Panda in the theaters together.
We saw Kung Fu Panda in the IMAX theater at the zoo, which is now shut down. I mean, it's been shut down for a while, but yes.
And also we saw Kung Fu Panda 2 together.
Did we?
Yes.
I don't even remember Kung Fu Panda 2. When did that come out?
A long time ago.
I don't remember seeing Kung Fu Panda 2.
You don't? We saw it together.
Really? Are you sure?
Yeah.
You sure you're not thinking of someone else?
I only have one dad.
You didn't see it with someone else?
I only have one dad.
It came out in May of 2011, and it seems weird because that's when Mitzi would just been a few months old.
Then maybe I saw it with my mom. Or maybe I saw it with you when you wanted to get out of the house.
Maybe. But that's it. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for listening to this strange long-distance version
of... what the hell?
If it's still tour time. We'll see you next time, either with a pensive art movie about Francoist fascism in Spain and the escape it provided by the beauty of art, or about a twisted man who made a deal with the devil and becomes Phantom of Disco Nightclub.
Amazing.
One of the two. But either way, I'm Phil.
And I'm Molly.
And we'll see you when...
It's Del Toro time. You said that really slowly.
I was waiting for you.